go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 83 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Donald Trump, once again, will be president. That's 2 out of 3 times. Second time it's happened in U.S. history. Ooh, Maui's showing his face again, that beautiful mug. A lot of slop on that. I got a guest host once again. Maybe I can pull the curtain back just a little bit so it's not. All right. Everything's back in order. Apologies for that. Sometimes when you have a co-host, you know, he'll just walk over everything and, make a way. All right. As we were saying, Donald Trump is in office. And a lot of people are overjoyed by this. And there is also a large segment of the U.S. population that are very confused, are very angry, are very just, they're in a mindset that, well, how are there people, how are there Americans that can vote for Donald Trump? And they can't get their head around this. And they're so upset that there are fellow citizens of theirs, some family, friends, coworkers, who would, churchgoers, that would vote for this human being, this caricature that is Donald Trump. I'm sorry, I do not know how to pronunciate all my words. And then to them, again, as we always hear Verbal Graffiti, we advise not voting, but if you did vote and you're confused as to why someone would vote for someone like Donald Trump, here's how I rationalize it. I hear this so often ago. How could you vote for Donald Trump? Or, you know, insert candidate's name. And to that, my response is, well, think of it this way. All right, we all have a coworker, maybe multiple coworkers that we despise, which is everything about he's overweight. He breathes heavily. He uses he reheats fish in the microwave in the lunchroom. He talks behind your back. He eats a brown nose or whatever it may be, right? We all have a colleague that you don't get along with. How could someone be friends with that person? But you look at that coworker's ring finger, and there's a ring there, which means that somebody married that coworker that you despise. Like he's going home and sleeping with somebody. Like somebody, an American, has chosen free will to sleep with that coworker that you cannot stand. Just think about that. Like somebody married that person. Like devoted their life to that person. And when you think about it in that way, like voting for somebody, like that's nothing. That's like a grain of salt. That's nothing. So and maybe that will help you better just rationalize how somebody could vote for a candidate that you despise or don't like. Hopefully, if you're anti-Trump, hopefully the way I think about the way I just described it will. Maybe that will soften the blow a little bit for you again, because we want joy from everybody, the liberals, the conservatives, the left, the right. There is this thing called the horseshoe theory that, you know, the farther left and the farther right you are, you're actually closer together with your thoughts and your viewpoints and what you're fighting for. But again, I'm not going to talk about political theory here. This is a smut humor podcast. Let's get into the episode, huh? Yeah, let's get into something I found on Reddit. This comes from the subreddit. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly. Vaginismus. PSA, your shitty boyfriend doesn't get a free pass. Vent. I am so sick of seeing so many people on here bring up that their boyfriend wants to sleep with other people or their boyfriend cheated on them and they considered forgiving them. Your boyfriend does not get a free pass. PIV, which I think means penis in vagina, is not necessary to live. This is a medical condition. Do not give him a pass because he whines about no penis in vagina. Dead bedrooms are a different discussion, and that's not what I'm referring to here. So many posts on here about a boyfriend cheating and asking if they should forgive him. Fuck no. He doesn't get a pass and doesn't consider opening the relationship because he cheated. He is a child. My boyfriend and I worked through this condition together. It was an emotional bond for the both of us. He never considered nor asked me about sleeping with someone else to get his fix. If your boyfriend asks for a pass, dump him. He's a shitty loser. Your boyfriend whines about no penis in vagina, PIV. Dump that baby. Rant over. I do not like your tone. Please do not speak to me in that manner ever again. What I read this post and I feel projection, right? You're projecting your anger that you have with your own non-functioning vagina in relationship with no PIV. You're projecting all of that frustration and that anger onto us. Well, sweetheart, I and the rest of us on Reddit and the internet and YouTube and podcasting world, we have nothing to do with your relationship. So do not talk to me in that tone or write to me in that tone ever again. You should be thankful that I'm even responding to your post right now on Verbal Graffiti. That's how angry I am with you. Now, just because you and somebody else with vaginismus, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Just because you and someone else have the same condition or health condition, that you two can go to like non-functioning vagina anonymous, which is similar to AA, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. But just because you two have the same condition and go to the same meetings that I just made up does not mean you're allies, that you see the world through the same prism. And that's why it's always, like, sometimes you'll see a protest. Let's say it's a woman's or LGBT or a black or a Latino, not protest, but like a parade or an event. And it's just like, yeah, just because you're both the same race or gender or sexuality does not mean like you have the same viewpoints on life. Like, you have that one thing. Now, it may be a very major thing and a major aspect of your life. And I will say, I will agree that having a non-functioning vagina is a big aspect of your life. So, but just because two of you have that same condition does not mean everybody with that condition has to obey your rules in terms of how to go about having an intimate relationship. I'm going to try to be mature with this one. I'm going to try to come at this from a John's perspective. Somebody, let's hypothetically, right? Let's say I have crippling ED. What's that called? Erectile dysfunction. This is all hypothetical. Mr. Perfect, you all know he's got plenty of blood flow. I still get morning wood. I could get it hard for the fatty potato you know, the threes and belows, I could still get hard for those. So my deck is still functioning even at in my middle age. So, but hypothetically, let's say I have crippling ED. I can't get it up for my lover. I can't get it up for my smut. I can't get it up for my fleshlight. I can't get it up for the bus driver in the morning. I can't get it up for my mistress. I can't get it up for anybody. I just have a wet noodle, a morning, afternoon, night while I'm sleeping. It just flops, but it never pokes up. It's just always pointed downward. I could pop Blue Chew, Cialis, Viagra, whatever new medication I could do. I could sniff Adderall. I could do anything. Anything, Red Bull vodkas, nothing helps. It's a limp, wet noodle, 99-cent spaghetti. It shrivels up like it's ramen noodle. There's nothing worse. Now, let's say, again, hypothetically, I'm in a loving relationship. I have a partner I truly care about. She truly cares about me. There's an emotional bond between us. It's love, baby. It's love. Doodling each other's name in our notebooks. And I love her. I love my girlfriend. Even though my penis doesn't work, I can't put it inside of her. I love her. Now, after a certain period, let's say we're together 5 years. And she comes to me. We've been through it all together, right? I've never been able to please her. Never with my penis, that is. And she comes to me and goes, listen, B-Man, I love you. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. We share a bed together. We share a life together. There's a bond that will last for eternity between the two of us. But I need the feeling of a hard, blood-filled, veiny penis inside of my vagina. I need that. I would like to think, as a loving lover, if I really love this woman, I could just be mature about it. I go, okay, I understand that is a big part of your life. Now, while you in your post, you said that penis in vagina is not needed to live. Well, scientifically, that may be true. Like, it's not a food shelter, water, right? Those are the three things you need to survive. Well, penis in vagina, you know, it's up the mountain, right? It's not needed for survival, but it makes surviving much more enjoyable and getting through this treacherous life. It makes it worth all the bullshit we got to go through. But if my girlfriend's just like, dude, I know I don't need that penis to live, but I need to be fulfilled, pun intended. Like, as her boyfriend, I would like to think, I go, you know what? I get it. Go out. Let's go find you a guy with a nice sized penis, and he can fuck you, and you can get that physical. Because sometimes as a babe, like, you just need to be fucked, and as a guy, sometimes you just need to fuck. You know, that's just a human an urge. So, like, I understand how my lady could have that urge again in this hypothetical situation where Mr. Perfect is a limp, floundering a ramen wet noodle. I would let my lady step out of pocket and get with a man with a functioning penis. Now, I think that's the mature way to look at this. Now, in your situation, like, no, as a girl, if you're a babe with vaginimus, whatever the fuck this is called, and you'd have a vagina that does not function, and you have a boyfriend, just saying no penis in vagina at all, there are not many men, and I know a lot of men, who would agree to spend the rest of their lives with their partner if there is no P and B involved. So I think, no, I know, they're just throwing that out the table. Hey, You cannot cheat on me. You cannot go find another woman. He's probably going to cheat on you if you have this condition where you have a non-functioning vagina. So my advice would be to be creative. Instead of having or risking your boyfriend or husband or lover, whoever, like step out of pocket and cheat on you, how about the two of you bring a functioning vagina into the equation, the loving equation? So why don't you go find yourself the lady of the night? Bring her to your bedroom, right? Let your man fuck that functioning vagina while looking in your eyes. So it's almost like he's fucking you mentally, but his dick gets the physical sensation of fucking. So you got to be creative when you have a non-functioning vagina. Just the way you're coming at us with this anger and these hard rules with no room for manipulation. No, that's just not going to work. It's not going to work just like your vagina doesn't work. Like, you gotta be creative. You gotta be open-minded if this is a condition you have. Or you have a vaginismus, sorry for mispronouncing that. Or if you have ED, you know, the other end of the spectrum, if you're a guy with ED. Like, you gotta be willing to bring other people into the bedroom so that people can be fulfilled, pun intended, physically. So, your marriage, your emotional relationship that you have, Reddit poster, I hope your boyfriend cheats on you and you and your non-functioning vagina live a life just the two of you. Let's go look at some photos. Well, Maui is getting very anxious. He's starting to play with my socks, tear them apart. He wants me to go outside with him, throw him the ball in the freezing cold. I'm going to try to make this segment quick yet prudent. We're going to get to the facts. We're going to get to the funny. We're going to get to the chuckles. I'm not going to try to record this two or three times to make it perfect. We're just going to make it perfect because that's what the B-Man is. I'm going to be perfect this segment. It's just going to be full. We're going to win a championship. That's a callback to that guy who played for the Sixers in the 80s. Said they would win all the playoffs. 4-4-4-4 undefeated. So let's see if we can do that. Uh-oh, Maui turned around to the other side. He's getting serious. Oh, please do not step on my soundboard. I was in this metropolitan downtown area. I was walking around. It's a very young area, college students. I'm not really sure. I'm not sure the name. Let's call them barely legals. The dudes and the gals, none of them made eye contact with me. And it's happened for a couple days. They all had their earbuds in, their big headphones on. They had their Uber Eats, their backpacks, head down. None of them would even acknowledge me. And I will admit, I am a nondescript guy. I'm about 6 feet tall, depending on how my posture is during the day and the height my sneakers give me. But yeah, I'm skinny, I'm pale, I have no hair, I'm not peacocking, right? But I'm down, so a lot of times I don't get looked at unless I have my video equipment. And when I lived in New York City, there was a point in my time, in my life where I worked in New York City for about 5 years. And during the summer, I would walk around shirtless. I would walk around the streets of Manhattan shirtless, and I would get a lot of looks because at the time, I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and there was a point where I probably reached the age, mid-30s somewhere, where I noticed I did not get as many looks as I had when I was younger. Shirtless. And I know, oh, well, that's just age. You know, so many people talk about gals when they hit the wall. Same thing with guys. We hit the wall. The babes stop looking at us as often or less often as they used to do. But when I was in this metropolitan area, like last week, it was so nobody, like adults would we'd make eye contact with each other. But these Gen Zs, and I don't shit on the college students, anyone who was born past the year 2000, because I look at high school students and the work they have to put in just to graduate high school. Like, high schoolers are not lazy. They are anything but lazy. When you just look at their schedule, they start school at 7:30. They go to school till what, 2:30, 3 o'clock. So they're in school 6-7 hours. Then they got their practice for another 90 minutes. Then they have a part-time job, let's say from 6 to 9 p.m. Then they go home, and maybe they have to do two to three hours of homework. So they get maybe during the week, maybe like Monday through Friday, maybe an hour a day to themselves if they're lucky. If they're not athletic and they don't play a sport and they're kind of a loner. But like teenagers, from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed, they're doing something for somebody else and not getting paid for it. And if they are actually working, it's probably minimum wage or a little bit above that. So now teenagers have a work ethic. I believe in the future of America because of the youth in America today. But these Gen Zs, they do not make eye contact with you. And I'm not, like, I have good hygiene. I try to smile at people. I try to exude, good vibes, good energy. And I'm not getting anything back from these people. It's almost like I'm a slave owner. Like, you know, I'm not sure if this was a myth or not, but, like, back in the 1700s and 1800s, slaves were not allowed to look at their owners like eye to eye. So if a black guy walked down the street and there was a white man, like, he had to look down. Like, that's what the Gen Zs are doing today. They're keeping their head down and not looking at anybody. And I just want to shake them all. Go, listen, you're not slaves. You could look at whoever you want as long as you want. Smile once in a while. Wave. Say hello. Be friendly. That's how you get the good vibes. But it's head down, bag of food that they did not make, headphones on, listen to whatever hell music. Am I just becoming a curmudgeon old guy? I just make some eye contact with a stranger. That helps build a community. It just hit me, like, wow, within the last week that none of these barely legal, I don't want to call them kids, but, you know, early 20s, mid-20s, they're just so in their own world, and just looking at a human seems like they'd have to put effort into doing it. I don't know how the mind works that way. Because to me, like, I make eye contact till, like, that person's eyes tell me not to make eye contact with that person. So it's only like we're living reverse eye contact lives. And I just noticed it. So that's why I bring that up. Maui laid down again. He kind of ruined my curtain. So now you can see what the backdrop behind the curtain looks like. There's nothing there. It's just styrofoam. All right, let's get into this one. Found this one on the subreddit. Social Justice 101. Speaking of barely legal college students. I'm a young white person in college, and I do not feel white shame or guilt as far as I can tell. I work very hard to fix inequalities and am an activist. I am always trying to be actively anti-racist and am on the path to becoming an educator so I can help teach future generations to be anti-racist and to practice abolitionist teaching in the public school systems. I have been aware of white guilt and what it means for many years, and I have never been able to relate to it. I am aware that I have a voice and I should use it, but that I should not be punished for my whiteness. Instead, it is a tool I can use to make further progress for others who are minoritized more so than I. But now I am wondering, should I feel white guilt? Well, you are an excellent writer, so maybe education is the field you should get into, become an English teacher, a writing teacher. I feel you. I don't have white guilt. I did not hear that term till I was probably in my mid-20s. I have never felt guilty for the color of my skin. I felt guilty for most of the actions I do in life. I feel guilty for, but the color of my skin is not one of them. Or my being a guy, I don't feel guilty. The only guilt I feel in terms of my body is, I call it able-bodied guilt. And when I see somebody who's disabled, when I see like a child in a wheelchair, or just a guy my age in a wheelchair, or someone with a severe mental disability, and they have walkers or canes, and you know their mobility's not there, as normal. Like I have a little guilt. I'm like, oh, why am I healthy? Like, why am I able to walk and run and hop while that person is in a wheelchair or a walker? Like that, like I do get some guilt. Like, just, is it the luck of the draw? Some people are healthy, able to walk. Some have to have a wheelchair. But color of my skin, I'm with you. I don't have any white guilt. I say, hey, continue not to have white guilt. I did notice in your post, you said you wanted to do abolitionist teaching. That might be the first time I've heard somebody call themselves an abolitionist today. Now, you do not get credit, extra credit, for being an abolitionist in 2024. Now, if this is 1820, yes, you get extra credit for being an abolitionist because it took courage in 1820s to be an abolitionist. In 2024, which is, 160 years since the Civil War, being an abolitionist is, you get no credit for that, right? Like, what's abolitionist? That means that everybody should have equal rights and ability to vote. In 2024, you get no credit for that. Like, in my mind, everybody is an abolitionist until proven otherwise, right? Everybody's an abolitionist unless that you have a friend who's like, hey, let's have a fantasy slave draft. Once that's propositioned to me, it's like, okay, maybe you are, no, you are an anti-abolitionist. But that's never happened to me. And I grew up in a white suburban neighborhood with mostly a white middle upper class people. So you think I'd come across some anti-abolitionist? Have not. Almost to a man and woman, everybody I've met is an abolitionist, and I have not had to ask. You are one until proven otherwise. Like if you collect like slave memorabilia, it's like, okay, maybe you are not an abolitionist. All right, I've said that term enough. Like being you must be exhausting. Like even though you say you have no white guilt, and I applaud you for not having any, you seem to think about race way too much. You view the world through like black and white, right? Everything you do and see throughout the day, you're asking yourself, okay, is that racist or is that not racist? Is that action, was that racist or was it not? And the problem with trying to go about your day through that prism, that viewpoint of a black and white, is life is not black or white. Like life is gray. It's a mix. Things are not so easily defined as, in your terms, racist or not racist. There's a lot of gray area. So for you, it's almost like, when you tell somebody, hey, you have 50 breaths per minute, and you never think about breathing until somebody brings up the topic of breathing. So you, like, all you think about is race. Like, most people do not think about racism until it's just present in front of them. But with you, everything is racism, even if it's not, because that's how you view the world. You're either racist or you're not. That action, what you did was racist, but what he did, that activism, was anti-racist. And that is viewing the world through that black and white, when everything's actually gray for the most part, that's exhausting. The way you think about life is exhausting. To be your friend must be exhausting. It's a heavy burden you have as a, and you're a white guy, right? Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't have the burden, but it's almost like you're inviting the burden on yourself to overcome for not having white guilt. So it's almost like not having white guilt, you're trying to, the way you're repenting for so is to put that burden on your shoulders. And I'm saying you don't need to put that burden on your shoulders. Now, what you're doing is admirable. You want to be an educator. You want to fight. You want to show people not to be racist. I just think education is the wrong area for you. Because if you go into public education, you're going to be confined by the curriculum. So you're not probably going to be able to do all the activist teaching, abolitionist teaching that you want to do. I'd say get into law. You know, we all know the judicial system is racist and black people have the worst of it. So I think you could have a better effect on society being a activist lawyer or just make a shit ton of money. I know maybe people your age think money is evil, but if you have money equals power. If you use power wrongly, like you could suppress people, but you put power and money. If you make lots and lots of money, money in the right hands can do a lot of good for society. Like if you make a lot of money, you can give that money to the black community through scholarships. You can hire blacks, minorities, women, LGBT, the whole spectrum, autistic people. With all your money that you make, go into finance, go into pharmacy, get into something where you make a lot of money. By the time you're 45, you can take all that money you made and go into communities, underserved communities, and help them out. Teaching, that is not the avenue because there's too many barriers. There's too many rules that you have to obey. Make the money so that you can make your own rules. All right, Maui is whining a little bit. We're going to get to our last segment, Salesman's Wife, by John Lawrence, great author. We are on page... What page are we on? We are on page top of 33. We'll read two pages. Good. But why don't we have our first session now and you can decide what you want to do afterwards, all right? He smiled down at her with such warmth and tenderness that all fear vanished from the young wife's mind. Fine, she said. Excellent. Let me get a small glass of wine to relax you, then we can start. He rose from his chair serenely and moved toward the far end of the room where a large table stood with several bottles of wine and liquor. She's quite a elusive little number, he thought, as he moved across the thickly carpeted floor, quite a little number. My guess is she'll be here just about every day once I get her going. That will be a delight. He poured two glasses of wine, then turning his back to Pamela, he opened a small golden box, took out a few grains of white powder, and dropped them into one of the glasses. This should relax her, he thought slyly, and it should do a great deal more. Smiling, he turned and walked back to the young wife, extending one of the glasses of wine toward her. Drink this, he said. It's very light wine. She took the glass from him. To love, he said, toasting her with his glass. To love, she replied shyly. Pamela sipped the wine slowly as Carlsberg sat again in the chair before her. Almost immediately, she began to feel calmer. There was a long silence as they drank. Finally, Carlsberg spoke. Tell me, Pamela, Why are you afraid of sex? At first, she was startled by his directness, but gathering her courage, she began to speak. Oh, it goes back so many years. When I was in boarding school, she talked quietly, telling him of her childhood and leading up to the events of the night before. As she spoke, she felt herself becoming quite lightheaded, and her words became slower and slower as her body eased into the comfortable chair. And that's pretty much the whole story, she said, until last night. What happened last night? She asked, leaning forward in his chair. She felt a twinge of anxiety as she tried to tell him about her husband's brutal act. You don't have to talk about it right now, Carlsberg said gently. It can wait. I think you've told me enough for the moment. He leaned back in his chair, and as he did, he uncrossed his legs, spreading them apart. Pamela found her gaze riveted to his crotch, for the tightness of his trousers fully revealed the enormous mound of his genitals. She could clearly see the lines of his penis, huge and thick, under his trousers, and the round bulge of his testicles. Nervously, she tore her eyes away, but not before Carlsberg had noted her reaction. Go suck a fat one.